I'd like to welcome our good friends, Dell Leonard, Mountain Home Bombers, high school run and jump defense is the topic today. Coach has been a Coach's Edge member, and we've had the chance to chat here and there about the run and jump. And I think you've picked the brain of one of our other Coach's Edge members, if I remember correctly, Coach, from a previous podcast on the run and jump. And so I love the chance when we get to, you know, meet face to face, or I can see you at least. I know we've had some video trouble here. But Coach, thanks for being on the podcast. And why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Well, thank you for having me. I'm a big fan of Coach's Edge, and it's really helped me as far as a coach. I've been coaching at Mountain Home High School for 28 years, and really didn't use the run and jump until later in my career. And we were really small, and every position had a lot of guards, and we were deep. So started diving into it and trying to educate myself. And of course, you know, the X's and O's and all that stuff is always out there, but you just reach out to other people and try to educate yourself.
So when you think, well, first of all, how'd you do last season? Tell us a little bit about your program, okay, and we'll talk a little bit more about this philosophy here.
We've had a lot of tradition here. You know, we are, if you're looking at the state of Arkansas, we are right below the Missouri border and dead center. And we are in a 5A classification in Arkansas, and the largest it goes to is 6A. So we travel a long way for just one game, like three and a half hours, 4 hours one way for one game. And traditionally we're going to be a little bit out athleted by most schools in our classification, but we work hard and we try to prepare and take advantage of an opportunity. And out of those 28 years, we've been to state playoffs 25 times. We haven't, during my time, we have not won a state championship, but we've been to 11 Final Fours. Before my time, the lady that I replaced, Janet Wood, retired, and I was fortunate enough to follow her. And she had won a state championship and had been to several state finals. And so I feel like we have a program that's well-respected in the state of Arkansas.
No doubt about that. I mean, there's a ton of tradition at your program. And you mentioned that this is more of a recent acquisition of the run and jump defense. Tell us a little bit about the why and what comes to mind when you think, you know, defense, Bomber basketball.
Well, I just think discipline and being able to play really physical and hard without fouling. And the game has changed so much for the better in a lot of ways. And, you know, I can remember the days when people just dreaded sitting through the girls' game to wait for the boys' game. And, you know, we don't want to be that program. And the shot clock came along in Arkansas last year. So we wanted to play faster. And we felt like that we had dabbled in run and jump in some previous years. And especially with the shot clock, that we wanted to incorporate the run and jump because we had some depth, and we are starting to, the talent well is starting to fill up a little bit more. Last year, we were very young. We played a lot of sophomores and a lot of juniors. We did graduate three seniors who were great kids, and they helped us, all of those kids helped us get back to the state tournament. We went through, out of those 3 years that we didn't go to the playoffs of the 28, the 2 years previous to last year were two of those years. So we definitely hit a wall there for a little bit, but we felt like that the decision to go with the run and jump helped us get into the playoffs.
So as we're thinking about run and jump, I mean, this is a high pressure defense. You mentioned the importance of speeding some teams up. You got the shot clocks. You want to play fast and having some depth. Talk a little bit about the buy-in that you need from the players in order to really sell out and do this at a high level.
Well, I tell them what I feel like is the truth. And that is that most teams don't want to commit to it because, number one, it's tough. It's hard work. But when you get good at it, especially if the other team only has one point guard, which you see a lot in girls basketball, then that's very, very difficult for that other team, for that one guard to have to go against that pressure the whole game. Now, they may not turn it over much, but they're going to get fatigued. And that's going to hurt them in so many other areas, such as being able to defend the other way and plus being able to get shots to fall. And then the turnovers will come. And we don't think about turnovers. We just think about doing it the right way, and the turnovers will come. But you got to have ball pressure. And as far as being able to teach buy-in, it instead of going with your traditional playing seven girls, you're going to play 10, 11, 12 kids if they're capable of getting the job done. And if I can, if they go out and practice every day and they're able to get playing time because this is our system and this system is going to help us get more playing time, then I think that causes huge buy-in by the kids.
What are some of the pros and cons? Coaches listen to this podcast, they search run and jump defense, they find this episode and they're kind of weighing some of these things. I know you've touched on them already, but there are a few pros you say, hey, you should do this, and a few, downsides coaches need to watch out for, be prepared for.
Well, if you're playing against a team that's way more athletic than you, then you got to be able to turn the basketball, and you have to be able to pressure the basketball. And sometimes when you're playing against better athletes, kids will get a little timid and they get into more of containing instead of pressuring. And I do think that comes into play maybe more so in your half court defensive game plan, but in the full court, you got to get the ball going out of control, and you want to get good enough to where most people will only run and trap when the ball goes to the outside to the sideline, and they're afraid to necessarily run and jump when the ball goes to the middle. But we don't really care if the ball goes to the middle or the outside as long as the ball handler's out of control. And so that's something sometimes a team that has more than one really good guard. You kind of pick the hill you die on sometimes. Our philosophy is as long as we can do it without fouling, and we understand that good teams might get one layup, a breakaway, or a breakdown. But if we have a rule that if we give up two layups in a row, we're going to get out of it just for a little bit before we come back to it. But the pros is just a lot of people don't do it, and I think that goes along with they don't know how to teach it. And then the other thing is if your kids play, well, I guess that could be a pro or a con, but the other thing is if your kids work really hard, it's definitely a pro, that's something that they're going to buy into. And the con, it could be too, how are the officials calling that night and being able to adjust to that. Do you have the depth? If you don't have the depth, it's really hard to do. And you may have some kids that can't necessarily, you may have a post player or a forward that can't necessarily match up with a guard, but they just have to learn how to get out and get the ball going out of control. So the con can be too, you do have to have the personnel to do it. And sometimes if the other team is more athletic than you, it's not going to work. But I'm going to tell you, my experience is if they're way more athletic than you and they have some skill to go with it, you're pretty much in trouble anyway.
Yeah, you're probably in trouble either
Yeah,
way.
it doesn't matter what you do.
That's a good point. All right, so let's have some fun here. Let's start to paint a picture for our coaches the best we can on audio of what some of these tactics look like, and what some of these scenarios would look like as far as being able to get into the run and jump defensively. So everybody, paint that picture of a basketball court in your mind as you're listening to this episode. And coach, let's say a team is, you've just scored, right? So they're
Right.
taking it out of bounds. What
Right.
is a traditional point of attack that a team would use to inbounds the basketball, right? And let's just go through like the first thing you're hoping to get done, right? If all goes well on an inbound after a made basket.
Okay, if they first of all, they need to be really fast about getting the ball out of the net and getting out of bounds, or else they're going to be, if you're good at it and you work at it, they're going to be covered quickly. So we don't assign like, hey, you've got number 12 all the time and you got to go find her and you've got number 10. It is the person you're the closest to. And it doesn't matter if you're the 6 foot slow post player, if that point their point guard's the closest to you, then you're grabbing her. And we have a color scheme along with terminology as far as on or off. And so and I don't want to get ahead of myself, but we always start with the whole into the part and then back to the whole. And for instance, yesterday in practice, we started just kind of introducing it. Now our older players know it, so we were introducing it to our younger players. And our colors, our practice gear is blue and gray. So we take five blues and five grays, we circle them up in the lane, and it's blue, gray, every other player. And we'll make them start running in a circle, counterclockwise, and we'll just toss the ball to one of them. And whoever we toss the ball to, they are the inbounder. And so they'll sprint out of bounds. And now our offense is working on the offensive side of it as well. And there's a certain way that we grab the ball and we run straight behind the backboard, step out with one foot and enter it fast. And so we try to get the ball out of bounds as quick as possible to make it tougher on our defense to match up. So if I'm guarding that girl who, if I'm next to that girl who has the ball, then I've got the ball. Now we're either going to be on the ball or off the ball if I'm guarding the inbounder. And our colors are blue, which is all out face guard. You don't have to worry about seeing the ball. You're just switching everything, all out face guard. And then if it's either blue on or blue off. And then white would be a denial where you can see your man and the ball. Everybody kind of knows that position. And then white on or white off. And then gold means we're going to get behind you and kind of let you feel us and push you a little bit and let you catch it, but you got to go 94 feet.
So let
Now,
me ask a quick question right here. So you have blue, white, and gold. You're in run and jump, but you have there's different variations to that.
right.
But what do you mean by, okay, you have blue, white, gold. I got you there. What do you
Right.
mean for like blue off or white off? What does that mean?
Blue, white off is the one we use the most. So that means that the girl who's guarding the ball, she's backing up and
Gotcha.
she's off the inbounder. And she's able, if someone does get beat deep, she's able to read that. But as soon as the ball comes in, she's got to run to her position, which is going to be in the full court. It's going to be a position of a triangle ball, you man. And so if we're really feeling like we can gamble a little bit, I guess is the right word, or pressure a little more, then we'll go white on. And you just got to make sure that you can, if you're guarding one of the girls that's trying to get open, that you don't get beat deep. And sometimes if all they have is a long baseball pass, then they're going to be in trouble. But we will graduate into other scenarios such as blue double, white double, which means as soon as it comes in, we're taking that grill on the ball and we're doubling the ball. And then everybody's rotating on that first pass. Sometimes if we're trying to get a feel, if it's a team we're playing in a tournament that we're not familiar with, and maybe we didn't get a real good scout on them, then we will just stay in a white off, no rotation. And we'll do that just for a half or a quarter, maybe just to get a feel. And then we'll come out second half and start rotating.
So you have different variations of the run and jump. Let's go. No matter what, coach, you're allowing the pass to go backward, correct? On all of them.
Yes. Unless it's a situation where we're dominating that team with ball pressure and they're really struggling, or maybe we're losing and we have to gamble a little bit. If we can, what I tell the girls, and we call that the ball line, where the ball is, say it's at the old 28-foot mark, and we've got a trap set, and the next girl is rotating up to take that next pass. We don't want her to go past the ball line, which the ball line is where the ball is straight across the floor, like your half court line. That's the ball line. And we don't want that defender rotating up. If the next pass is backwards, we'll let them throw it backwards. And then we'll close out on them while the two that were in the trap are recovering. But I told a girl actually just yesterday, she asked me that same question. And I said, if you can smell blood in the water and you feel like you can get it, then I'm going to trust you. But that's going to, we're probably going to beat those guys anyway. So against good teams, you don't want to go below or past the ball line.
So One thing that you mentioned earlier was you didn't mind so much if the ball handler goes middle, right? And for I think most coaches, that's something that, I mean, that's a red light, right? We're trying to get the basketball, we're trying to get them on the run, we're trying to push them along the sideline. We're bringing that next defender who's back with us, they're coming in, they're going to trap on the strong side. We're jumping into the passing lanes on the backside or the weak side. We're sliding over in rotation. The player who's going to be open is the one where we're kicking back. Ball gets past there. We rotate up. We try to push him back to the next sideline. That's pretty, like, correct me if I'm wrong. That's like your general run and jump, right?
Correct.
Now, you mentioned at some point somebody's going to go middle anyway. But it sounds like for you, you're a little more comfortable with that happening in general. Talk a little bit about, why that is and some of the things that you do that may be different from other coaches.
Well, it just we feel like if we're applying ball pressure, then once they take off either to the outside or the middle, they should be out of control. And again, a really, really good guard is a different story. But if they've got their head down and they can't see, and let's just say if you could visualize a two guard set once it come in, the ball came in, a two guard set all the way at the end of the floor, you got someone pressuring the ball, you got the other guard in a direct line level with the ball, and your defender's in that little triangle there. That ball takes off to the middle, and we've got some players that do a great job of it. And they explode to the ball with their hands up. Well, they either have to elevate that pass or float that pass, or they have to bounce pass it. Now, the person guarding the ball, we call that a jump switch. And so the rotation doesn't have to happen with your back three people or your middle defender if they're in a, like a lot of people like to get in a 2-1-2 set. And so your guard who was originally on the ball on that jump, she just sprints and they jump switch, and you'll be surprised how many times that guard will get that bounce pass or that lob pass.
So you're pushing them into the middle. You have a defender there because of that triangle. They're essentially waiting high hands, right? The on-ball defender's peeling off and taking the person that the person who was in that gap, that triangle was matched up with, and you're even getting that deflection or that steal quite a bit.
Yes, and when we don't necessarily say, okay, we want you to make them go to the outside or to the middle. When we get into some of our breakdown drills, it's just you turn that ball as many times as you can. And
Coach,
we
you
want to
wrote.
go ahead.
Sorry, I just wanted to say you wrote something to me. This has probably been a year ago when you were talking about run and jump. You wrote, it's not about turnovers. It's about contesting every dribble, pass, and shot. And it's about everyone being on a string together, moving together. And then the last thing you said, it's about communication. Now, I'm not going to give away your document because this is an important document, I'm sure, to your program. But I wanted to share that because I just think that's gold. Can you talk and elaborate a little bit more on those statements?
If you just go back, I'm just thinking about practice yesterday because we just started to build it. We had a couple of girls that were guarding the ball and they felt like they were doing a great job, but the person with the ball was able to stand up and just throw a bomb. And it looked like, it looked like Tom Brady throwing a pass. And there's not very many girls that can do that, but we do have a couple. And the person they were thrown to caught it in stride and shot a layup. And we were close to the person that caught it, but the whole deal there is you can't let someone, turn and throw that pass. They should never, ever be able to make that pass. And the girl that was on the ball was she's one of our better players and extremely hard worker, but she gave up too much of a gap. And furthermore, if the person is dribbling and they pick their dribble up, and then, and I don't mean this to sound bad, but for a girl to be able to do what she needs to do physically to make that pass, that means she's got to pick it up, she's got to cock it back, and she's got to take a big step. And they should never, ever be able to do that. And so that's something that's so important is ball pressure. And I would rather someone go out of control by you to the outside or the inside than to make those passes.
I really like that. And you're 100% right. That court's the same size, but
Right.
in general, those players are smaller, right? A
That's right.
girl may, that's really big, maybe 6'2" on the boy side, a really big, high school boy might be 6'8" or 6'9". So
That's
that's
correct.
a different amount of power needed to throw a pass. That's so much more ground to cover, which is why, I'm always intrigued on the girl side of different ways that we can, apply more ball pressure and try to create more turnovers for some of those just general physical reasons that you
Right.
mentioned already. What
Well,
are
and
you? Go ahead.
who do
I'm
you
sorry.
think about who's getting the rebound most of the time? I mean, it's their big kids. And if we've got those outlets covered up and we're applying immediate pressure, then that means that post player is having to handle the ball. And there's not a whole lot of post players that work on ball handling.
So talk a little bit about that on a miss. You're still getting in, you're still applying pressure. I mean, that's another thing that I think a lot of coaches maybe would like to do more is keep the pressure on, whether you make or miss the shot, instead of just doing
Right.
it on makes. Talk
Well,
about any, tweaks and strategies that you've been able to use to implement that.
you just try to make practice harder than games, and you go back to that circle drill where you've got them all lined up pretty much right in front of the rim, circling. And I'll say, okay, whoever I pass it to, you're getting out of bounds and inbounding it quickly. And we've got to communicate. I'll tell them beforehand what press we're in, wide off, blue on, whatever. And the other side of that drill is you can say, okay, now when I toss it to you, you're going. You just got the rebound and we're going. And that means that, so if the person I'm guarding, I toss it to her, then I'm simulating she just got the rebound. And then everybody else has got to get in their position according to the ball. And the offense can put a lot of pressure on you because some of them will turn and sprint. Well, we have what we call see the ball sprint. You got to be able to sprint and still see the ball. And then you have other little things you can do. You can, when you start breaking it down into the part method, you can go 2-on-2 rebounding all the way up to 5-on-5, where we will put, the Izzo drill, where we put everybody by the offense, all five players behind the free throw or the 3-point line. And then the defensive team is matched up on defense, and coach can move anywhere he wants, dribble anywhere, and they have to stay in position according to the ball. And then we'll throw up a shot, and they have to block out and go get the rebound. And then the other team has to transition into the press, whether it goes in or it doesn't.
So my hope with where we're taking this episode is, if you're a coach listening, you want to learn the basics of a run and jump defense, just Google it, right? But what I'm going to ask coach about is like the stuff you're not going to find on a, hey, how do you run? Like, so as I get specific here, coach, that's my hope for our listeners is, if you already know how to run the run and jump, there's certain situations that other coaches are going to try to implement. And there's an infinite amount. So obviously we're not going to be able to cover them all, but I'm going to throw a few at you, coach, that I'm sure you've experienced, and just talk about what you do defensively in those situations. First, let's go to an elite guard, right? The other team has an elite guard. Do you have anything that you do against them, as far as trying to get the basketball out of their hands? Is that something that you would do before they even catch the ball? Is that something that, hey, when they catch the ball, we're going to make sure that we double them to get out of their hands? How do, I guess I shouldn't even ask that. How
No,
do you
that's
treat an
fine.
elite guard? Period. That's the
You know,
question. How do you treat an elite guard?
dead ball situations obviously are easier because you can set up and you know what you're going to do before the pass. But you can double that elite guard with the person who's also guarding the inbounder, and try to keep her from catching it and make one of the others catch it. And then when it comes in, everybody goes back to position. And you can, try not to let them get it there, but or you could let them catch it and then double them immediately. Put someone where they have an angle. It may not necessarily be all the way back and off. It may not all be all the way up on the ball. They might just be creating that angle around the elbow if they're guarding the inbounder, where, that elite guard gets it. We're doubling her immediately, and everybody else is rotating on the backside. That's primarily what we'll do with an elite guard.
Do you change it? I mean, what I found with any really good player is, if you give them a steady diet of anything, they're good enough. They're going to figure some things out.
Oh, yeah.
Do you You know, do you have some variations and some different tweaks, even though, hey, this is the thing we're generally going to do?
Pretty much. And we also, what we can do is total deny that guard. Say we're in white off and take the person guarding the ball and just kind of get back and make sure that they can't throw over the top to that guard.
Yep.
So she's kind of reading that. And then the girl guarding that really good guard is not, she will not be part of the run and jump. She will stay with that girl. And then we'll just do a four-on-four run and jump with everybody else.
I like that. I like that. It's like a run and jump boxing one, essentially.
Sure. Sure. And we, you know, and we just kind of go by feel and, you know, we'll do all kinds of different things and in practice according to who we're playing. And it always comes down to preparation and who you're playing.
Do you continue to, you know, the ball's advanced past half court. You haven't been able to get anything that you really want yet. Do you still continue to jump it, or do you get more into a base defense?
It depends on who the team is. Pretty much, we really like to hang our hat on our half court man as well, and pretty much we're matching up, and then we're pushing everything to the outside, help cross cover down. I mean, you're going to help quick, but you're going to recover quicker. No middle drives. We feel like against the people we play, if we give up middle drives, it's going to kill us. They kill us on the boards because they're having to help uphill. So it's for us, it's the beginning and the end. It's ball pressure. And then you got to put a body on somebody and block out and rebound.
Is there anything that you've done when a team has put their best decision maker, as you said, a 2-1-2 would be a common way to try to attack this. One of the different variations. Yeah. If they put, you know, their best ball handler in the middle, they're trying to get the ball to the middle, best decision and passer there. What are some things that you've tried to do?
Well, I would just, if that's the best one, I'd probably just tell the girl guarding her, you're not leaving her. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're going to have to really pressure the ball so they can't throw it long because you got a little bit longer rotation on that backside. But, and if you get really, really good at it, you don't have to necessarily worry about that best ball handler because the five people just get really good at it, especially if it's five kids switching everything on screens and so on and so forth. But, you know, that's something that we would do. And the whole purpose for the 2-1-2 is it makes it really hard for the defense to rotate in time. Mm-hmm. And it leaves that middleman wide open a lot of times. So, and that's something that, you know, offensively, that just you saying that right there is something that I need to do in practice. You know, I need to take our best guard and put her in the middle of the floor and make everybody else work out of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just imagine it's a positive, right? The trouble is you got to get as the offensive team, if you're putting your best player in the middle, you got to get the basketball there, right?
That's
to
right.
To really break down the defense. Do you have, you know, one or two other players that are capable enough in the backcourt to be able to get the basketball to the middle without turning it over, knowing that, you know, that player who's the best player in the middle is probably, you know, being tightly guarded. And so, you know, that comes with the pros and cons of, you know, if you have a really good team, you're probably going to be pretty successful and you're going to have multiple ball handlers.
Right. Yeah. And, in girls basketball and even, well, in the basketball as a whole, you know, you look back and, of course, I live in Arkansas and I grew up as a kid, you know, watching 40 Minutes of Hell with Nolan Richardson. And I'm not taking anything against Coach Richardson or those teams, but that was a day and time where you had one or two primary ball handlers, a couple of forwards, and then a post. Mm-hmm. And nowadays, just about all five players on the floor can handle the ball pretty well. Mm-hmm. And that's why you don't see a lot of run and jump at the higher levels anymore.
No.
But the good thing for high school girls basketball, you're not going to have more than one or two really good ball handlers most of the time.
Mm-hmm. What are some things that you focus on if you are playing a team? Say, hey, they have a poor ball handler on their team, or the team in general is a poor ball handler. Is there anything you tell your girls differently?
Well, we'll start out with gold, which means we'll let them catch it, but they're going to catch it and have to go 94 feet with it. But we let them catch it, and then we just start pressuring and making sure we're in position. And you're going to be able to turn those type players easily. Mm-hmm. And once they start turning and getting out of control, then it's pretty easy. And then as they get fatigued and maybe start to hang their head a little bit, now you can say, okay, now we're going to go light. We're going to make them have to work to get it in bounds as well. And, but just, you know, a lot of times, you know, people say playing behind them, let them throw it in. That doesn't make a lot of sense. But if it's amazing how you can stand behind a player and just kind of touch them and they'll keep moving up to the baseline. And they'll inbound it, and then they've got to go a long way. The other side of that, it's amazing also when you're in the blue, which is an all-out total denial, and the defender can't see the inbounder. Literally, they can just throw it right by your ear.
Mm-hmm.
But they just won't. They won't hardly do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, it's a panic.
Yeah, know? And I had an old college baseball coach that I played for that used to say pressure does amazing things. It makes water run uphill, you know, and that's, you see the pressure and the fatigue just start to take over.
Mm-hmm. Let's say things break down. All right. So you've run and jump, you're at a disadvantage now, right? You've been caught in rotation. Something broke down. It could be a 2-on-1, 3-on-2. What are some things that you teach your girls to recover in situations as, you know, at this point, we're getting closer to the rim?
Well, we just, you know, you start out with disadvantage drills in practice. And, you know, one of our drills that we do is called the rush drill. And it's two defenders versus one ball handler. And they're just working on, they go full court, and the one is trying to get to the rim and score, and the other two are working on angles, ball pressure, trapping. And then if they get a steal, or even the offense player ends up making the shot, now we're going the other way, 2-on-1. And we teach, you know, how to defend the front rim and how to fake and stunt and guard two at once and things like that. So, and then you can get in, you know, you get into your buildup, you know, 3-on-2 and 4-on-3 and so on and so forth. And I just think creating those disadvantage drills where you have more offensive players than defensive players on the floor helps a lot. And those, and there's, I tell them all the time, they ask great questions, and I'll be like, well, there's things happen in basketball, and things will happen that we've never discussed or talked about, and you just got to fix it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I like the fact that you're going offense in the example that you just gave, offense with multiple defenders, and you're playing that back, right? So you down
That's
and back,
right. Yeah.
Offense mm-hmm. might turn the basketball over, whatever that might be, teaching the kids, okay, how do we recover? We're outnumbered, things are broken down, we just turned the basketball over. You know, how are we going to guard the ball? Are we going to give up that next pass? It's a little bit of cat and mouse, right? You mentioned stunt and recover right there. And that's something that we probably don't practice, you know, in general as coaches enough.
Right. And, you know, and once it's funny because they just, once they get a feel for it, and they just start to get really good with it and really confident with it. And, you know, there's so many do's and don'ts. And, you know, we could, like you said at the beginning, we could talk forever, but, you know, a couple of don'ts: don't ever have three people running at the ball. You should never have that. If you're guarding the girl, if the ball is on toward the outside, or, you know, if you got the volleyball court, if the ball is outside the volleyball court on a sideline and I'm guarding the next pass down the sideline, I almost never, never, ever leave that girl. Mm-hmm. And, you know, ball pressure can, if you can get to where you can stunt, if you're guarding that girl down the sideline, who's being passed to, stunt and get back, sometimes you can pick that pass off if the ball pressure elevates the pass.
Yep.
But when we've had the teams that were really good at it, we could go ahead and run at the ball there, but that's rare. And you better have a pretty special group if you're going to do that.
Yeah, because that, I mean, you're running at the ball in that situation. I mean, you're just popping that pass over top and you're in big trouble. But to teach your kids stunt a little bit and pick that pass is something that that's high level defense. Most coaches are probably just going to be like, you're going to just be in a good, sound defensive position where you can pick that pass. But then you start to add in, hey, we're going to stunt, trying to get them pick the dribble up, pop that pass over. We're going to take that. And it's a whole nother level because, I mean, okay, if I'm guarding you in the corner, and somebody's coming down on the sideline, and I start lifting up, and I'm the one that's coming in to jump that. I mean, that's an elite defensive team to be able to help off the strong side corner.
Yeah.
Like
that's
that.
a really that's a really fast and long team, and we don't get that much here. So it's not fair to the other three girls trying to cover that much distance in that rotation on the backside. It just it's almost impossible.
Tell us about any other, you know, don'ts, right? The ball cannot go, you know, from the trap to the inbounder, you know, the middle. We don't want to get caught in any of these, you know, 3-on-2 types of situations. What are any other don'ts that you guys have, or common errors that happen that you really try to shore up as you've just started basketball season?
Well, you get, you know, it's hard to say it's don't be quiet. I'd be one of them. You got to talk. You have to talk. No, you got to know how to switch screens. And, you know, a lot of times teams will set that diagonal back screen guard to guard, and you better know how to switch that and get below the screener, or they're going to get open. You don't foul, you because now they've changed it in Arkansas where it goes to, after 5 fouls and a quarter, the same as NCAA women, it goes to 2 shots.
Yep.
You cannot foul, absolutely cannot foul, but you have to know how to be physical without fouling. And that's where you get a gauge of officials. You don't ever, ever have a trap set and foul. That's the worst thing you can do. And the second worst thing you can do is think that a jump ball is a good thing. That's, I don't want a jump ball right there. I want them to have to figure out how to pass out of that. So, and then we don't knock the ball out of bounds, because then you just give them a free pass. You know, if we're deflecting the ball, we want to deflect it to the middle part of the court. The other don't is, you know, we understand, and I said this earlier, that you might give up a layup every once in a while, but if you give up 2 layups in a row, then, you know, we're struggling there. We're not going to slow them. It's not going to be a layup drill. And effort. I mean, if you're not giving effort, I mean, if you're not winning your race and you're not giving effort, then you can't play. You're not going to play that game. And if you got to run down the floor, don't run down the floor beside your man. Be in position according to the ball and see the ball. So you don't ever, you know, go where you can't see the ball. Free throw line. If they get the ball inbounded and we're in a really high pressure white or blue on or off situation, and they're able to inbound the ball off of a free throw make, when you had a chance to sit there and match up like who you wanted to match up with and you line up with them, that's like inexcusable. That should be like a big advantage. So now the other side of that is we don't necessarily want them at the free throw line either.
Right. You know, it depends on the officials, how they're calling that night. Obviously, I always thought of very physical teams are, you know, referee's not going to blow the whistle every single time, right? You can almost get called for a few in the beginning, and then they kind of be like, well, I guess this is the way this team's going to play. And then they start to, you know, back up a little bit with the whistle. But it does bring a great point. Have you ever had to bring somebody up from the middle defensively where you've had to kind of vacate the middle in order to, you know, guard somebody lift up in the backcourt? And if so, you know, what are some of the rotations you've had to do there?
Well, that would probably be like a situation where we'll have a call on that, where they've cleared you out. They've got the ball in, they've cleared you out. And what we do there is, and I think we call it tandem. You know, that's where, say, the guard gets it in, she clears everybody out. Well, what you do is you take off down the court. The other four defenders are going down the court with the four that are clearing out. The girl who is closest to the ball, when she hits half court, she's coming back full speed. And then the other three are rotating behind her.
So,
and that's where they might think that, okay, we've got them cleared out and our good guard is going and we're pressuring. We turn and she takes off, and all of a sudden we're kind of ambushing them.
Mm-hmm. So in that situation, if that's generally your middle player, they've pushed everybody down, waved everybody down. Okay, we got the basketball and, you know, our primary ball handlers hands, they're bringing a basketball, they cross half court, person closest to half court, right? Whether that person is driving closer to the sideline or the middle, they're jumping it, correct?
That's they're coming back full speed, and then the other three behind them are coming back too. And a lot of times what you'll see is those offense players just got their head down jogging because they're so used to that guard just bringing it up by herself.
So we ran this when I was coaching middle school one year. We had a ton of success with that. I mean, I know it was middle school boys basketball, but that was actually something that we did a lot. Was we just tried to get them at half court, you know, and there were times where we would extend and, run a jump full court, but for the majority of the time, let somebody get the basketball. Okay. As they get, we're going to try to speed them up, preferably push them to the sideline, but this is taking a little longer. We want it that way because we want everybody else to get down the court.
Right.
And as you mentioned with girls basketball, which, and for junior high boys, that's still a big court. That's a long pass, right?
It is.
And so if there's, a kid down in the corner, a kid down the opposite corner, a kid in the high post or the block, and now you got two people pressuring you in the corner where half court is on a trap, there's a lot of ground and decisions you need to make in still a pretty good amount of space. And we'd rotate, and we caused a lot of turnovers in that situation because we denied the strong side pass. Rotate up from the back side. And a lot of times if they, threw the basketball back to the person who was kind of in the middle or trailing the play, and it's simple, but I mean, we'd pick that pass, we'd get down and get a layup.
Yeah, if they cannot make a long pass, I mean, I used the term blood in the water earlier. That really takes a lot. I mean, that puts them at a huge disadvantage.
As we finish out this podcast, Coach, do you have, I know you talked about you have different colors, really six different variations that you use with your run and jump defense, which is a tremendous. I mean, I love that, you're at the point with your program and your girls, you can make different calls and different variations. And then even with that, there's other variations based on who some of the better players are within your team. So, I mean, I'm forgetting even where I'm going with this, but like, do you have, we're not going to try to turn you over so much. We're just going to try to wear you down, pressure, and start to, engage the team more so as they get into what may be closer to their actual half court offense.
Right. And, that's pretty much it. And, I wanted to say earlier, you asked me about the don'ts, and I missed a couple there. And I said, don't foul, don't give up layups. One of the downsides is if you don't have depth, you will get fatigued. Mm-hmm. And then your weaker defenders are going to get exposed. And so on dead ball situations, you're going to want them back and not having to guard the ball. And then the other thing, Steve, is it's just hard. It's hard. And that's why a lot of teams don't do it, is because it's just too hard. It's hard to teach at times, and it's hard for players because it takes tremendous effort.
Tremendous effort. You have to have some kids that can just flat out play defense, right?
That's right.
You may not have five, but you got to have some kids that can get up in you and guard. And the hard thing from, which is why as a coaching staff, you have to get that buy-in, is because you have to be alert. There's a lot of players that generally, like, you can shut your brain off as you transition from one end of the court to the other. And then, okay, where am I at? Now I'm getting focused on my defense, especially if you're sitting back playing zone, something like that. Again, I'm not saying that wrong, but for a run and jump, it's wrong because your brain must be alert at all times.
Right. Yeah. That's one thing I tell them, is you got to stay true to what we were doing. I mean, you got to be extremely focused on defense, and just like, the offense has got to be focused, but, and I tell them from the get go, practice is not always going to be fun because, I mean, it's going to be fun at times, because if you start getting it right, it's going to become more fun because you're going to get out in transition, you're going to play fast. And then we're going to, we'll break things down to create disadvantage drills so we know how to handle those situations in games. But there's some of those drills are tough, like the one-on-one finishing drill, 6 minutes a day, the two-on-two stunt and recover drills, the three-on-three closeouts, the four-on-four no hands, the five-on-four disadvantage full court, or any other disadvantage. But you got to have a couple of elite defenders to be able to create that chaos, and they got to be relentless, and they got to play hard and be held accountable. They got to be in great condition, and then I mentioned earlier, the great communication.
Let's do one drill that you can paint a picture of, Coach. You mentioned a handful of them. You shared a few already that are great for getting kids to communicate, getting matched up with somebody who may not be their traditional matchup. What's one of the drills that you like to do with your players to, really help teach this defense?
Well, we just start out with one-on-one, turn the ball as much as you can, and then we'll graduate to two-on-two and just teaching them how to, when you're before your man catches the ball, we want you moving and be on them as soon as they catch it, coming from that triangle. And then if you're guarding the man that is making the pass across to the other guard, then we want you in that triangle before the ball's caught. And basically, we just begin by making two lines on the baseline, about 30 feet of the width of the floor, and we just they're not allowed to go deep. They're just working on getting to the ball into the triangle before the ball's caught. And it's if you see kids doing that right, it's impressive. And then we'll go to 3-on-3 with the same rules, and
I'm gonna stop you
just
right there, Coach. So when they're going 2-on-2, is that live? Like, can the offensive players like just try to break it and get all the way down and score, or are they trying to work their way down the court?
we won't let them go live for a little bit when we're teaching it. They have to, the person without the ball can't snowbird is what we call it. And you got to stay in line with the ball. We're just working on getting to that positioning. And now when we get into, then we'll build up and let them go live. But we'll try to, in those 2-on-2 situations, we'll tell them, if you got a trap, they shouldn't be able to make that long pass. And then if it's a jump switch, then you should be able to get there.
Coach, this has been great. I mean, we've been going for, I don't know, about an hour, and there's so much more to talk about. To our listeners, appreciate you, because we've been flying around. This has been like a Fast and Furious of episode of just like quick little question here, quick little question here, of all sorts of things about run and jump. But this has been tremendous. Coach, thanks for doing this.
Well, thank you. And I've got all kinds of practice plans. I've got everything written out where I can share it with anybody. If anybody wants to call me or email me, I can give that information. I mean, when I started, I was totally clueless on what to do, and I just started digging. And Forrest Larson was one of the first people that I reached out to, and I feel bad because I went blank on the coach that you shared with me
Oh,
on the running out.
Coach
Coach
Campbell.
Campbell, yeah, that's right. And he was awesome, and I highly recommend if anybody wanted to talk to him, Coach Campbell was great. But I mean, man, I'll share anything.
Yeah. Well, with that in mind, Coach, tell us where we can contact you, get a hold of you.
My phone number is 870-421-1090, and my email address is D Leonard, LEONARD, at MH Bombers, BOMBERS.com.
Cool. Very good. I really appreciate it. I think that this is definitely an advanced progression type interview on the run and jump defense with all the different variations that we do. So, even for a coach that's listening and you've been running the run and jump for a while, Coach Leonard, I would recommend people reaching out to him and talk about the different variations that you guys been doing. And proof's in the pudding. I mean, you've been doing things at a high level. And have a lot of tradition at Mountain Home with the Bombers, and a good Instagram page as well. I don't know who's running your Instagram, but I follow you guys on Instagram, and one of
Well,
the
thank you.
few high school basketball programs with like an actual Instagram page besides like just throwing up clip art photos or something like that. So
Well,
that
thank
goes
you.
a
We We do have a young man who does a lot of that for us. He's our media guy, and he does a great job. But I also, on my personal Instagram, I use it a little bit more to promote our kids who want to play at the next level. So, but we have that as well, and it's just, I think if you just search Dell Leonard, it'll pop up. But I can help people more through the phone, just calling me
Yeah, of
or
course.
emailing me.
Sure. No doubt about that. Coach's Edge, listeners, appreciate you guys. Thanks for taking the time to listen to the Coach's Edge podcast, learn a little bit more about the run and jump defense. Get after it today. And once again, Coach Leonard, appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really been a privilege and an honor to be on here. And I appreciate everything that Coach's Edge does. I mean, and same thing to the listeners. If you're not a member, you need to be a member. I've been coaching for a long time, and after 27 years, it's the best thing that I have found as far as being able to get on the website, and Steve sends out stuff all the time. That's excellent.
Appreciate that, Coach. Very, very kind of you. Thanks again. Get after it today.